Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 83. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And Josh.
And Melissa.
And unfortunately, we've had some technical difficulties, so today Ethan was not able to join us, a.k.a. Dave's soundboard broke. Yippee. This week, we're talking, continuing the Joe Dante series, we're talking about Explorers, a very interesting film, a troubled film.
Yes.
But it will be fun. Before we get to that, though, what did we watch this week? I guess I'll go first, because I got pretty much nothing. I guess I'll give Barry his props first, getting Screen Geeks our first DVD jacket quote.
Yay.
On a Garrison Keillor, the man on the radio in the red shoes, were quoted above Variety.
It's just
a ScreenGeeks.com, but Barry wrote that review, so, you know, obviously.
Above Variety, right?
Yeah,
above Variety. Yeah,
above.
We're at the top. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's big. Variety's like my other Bible, so that's huge to be above Variety.
That's awesome. So, obviously, I had to go buy it. Like, you got it ordered in at Barnes & Noble on Thursday, and so I'm like, I got to go buy it. So, I didn't watch it, and it's really good. I enjoyed it. It's a thing where if you know what Prairie Home Companion is and you like it, you'll love this documentary. If you have no clue, I can't promise anything. I'm just saying. And then I've watched the first four parts of Torchwood, Children of the Earth, which is freaking awesome. I'm going to finish it tonight. So, yeah, that's about it. I'll let you guys go next if you want.
Alrighty. Well, Josh and I watched all the same things this week. So we watched Hamlet 2, which
Have you seen that yet, Barry?
No, not yet.
Okay, you need to borrow it from me.
Thoroughly enjoyed, which I had heard of it, and you talked to me about it before, but I didn't know exactly what it entailed, and Steve Coogan
it entails
is just
rocking sexy Jesus. That's what it entails.
Yes, and it was awesome.
I just want to see it because Elizabeth Shue is in it. I'm a big
She's
Elizabeth
so
Shue fan.
So funny,
isn't she?
It was funny. And I didn't even
just like, and there's so many. I've seen it like three times now, and it just gets funnier every time I see it because there's so many running jokes that you pick up on.
You were awesome. Cracking up.
Yeah.
So that was a good watch. And we saw The Proposal, which I wanted to see that for a long time, and it wasn't nearly as funny or witty as I thought it was going to be.
Yeah.
And Ryan Reynolds really had no character to himself. It was all focused on Sandra Bullock, and even so, her character was just like this bitch, crazy devil boss. So, I don't know. It was okay. It was pretty typical. I'd give it like a 7 out of 10, because I'm a girl. So.
And Josh.
I really didn't like it.
Oh, okay. You really didn't like it? Yeah.
Fair
chick
enough.
Flick.
Start growing boobs. Just kidding. That's not funny.
No.
boobs are funny.
Don't talk about that yet.
Okay. Last night we saw Ghostbusters.
Awesome.
And I hadn't seen that in a long time. I think
Dana's not here. Only Zoom.
I think I'd seen more bits and pieces of it recently than the whole thing at once. So it was nice to see it again and with our whole families.
That's such a good movie.
And you were wearing your glow-in-the-dark
Ghostbuster shirt.
Nice.
Epic.
Yeah, I think the special effects are fantastic in that movie. I think the claymation stuff is a little rough, but all the puppetry and stuff and the miniatures, it just, like, it works. It's awesome.
That script is so good.
Well, it's like, why don't you do practical effects more often anymore?
Practical effects, but those characters and those jokes are so solid. My favorite joke is still when he walks in Dana's apartment and she, like, throws some stuff at him. He's like, God, I guess the flowers worked.
Yeah.
Well, and it was
she
funny.
Sleeps above the covers. Four feet above the covers.
I think it was funny because my dad was watching it with us, and I know he hasn't seen that in a long time, but he could name so many lines from the movie. He was like, oh, well, no, this is the best line, this is the best line. And we had like this whole conversation about what your favorite line was in the movie. And he could name like at least 10 lines, which I was impressed with because clearly it stuck with them. And then your parents were talking about the first time they saw it in theaters and how funny it was. So
I actually saw an interview with Harold Ramis the other day, and I guess he's going to be the one to direct it if they make another one.
Yeah.
But he was talking about how they want to use practical effects, and like, he doesn't want to use CGI and
good.
Stuff. So.
Good.
Like, really? Or in a Spielberg Indy 4, we're not using...
No, it sounded like really, because he's like, it all looks the same, and you can't tell.
Good.
Ghostbusters look cheap, and I want it to look cheap, and all that stuff. So, I think because they're not really being, like, pushed to make the movie, I think that they're going to be able to do something special if
nice.
They do it. So,
very cool.
And then we watch The Knowing again, but...
Knowing. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep, that's about it.
It was good. I'm surprised that I saw that in theaters and didn't get super creeped out, because it really just has this like 50s horror feel to it. And
yeah.
I really liked it. It was good.
Cool.
Very good.
I saw Michael Mann's Public Enemies, which I loved. I think it's his best movie since Heat. One of Johnny Depp's absolute best performances. Everybody's been complaining that there's not enough action, and I guess if you compare it to Transformers 2, where everything's exploding every 5 minutes, then yeah, not enough action. But seriously, like Public Enemies is thrilling. The action sequences are fantastic. The love story angle really works. I think this is one of the best films of the year. I completely love this film. I thought it was wonderful. I didn't mind the digital stuff. Michael Mann is trying to make this statement about how there's a timelessness to not only crime, but also to these guys who want to be famous. Like, you know, John Dillinger loves his fame. He's addicted to his fame. So it's like, this could be, you know, it could be John Dillinger. It could be O.J. Simpson. It could be, you know, Bernie Madoff. It doesn't matter. Like, you know, there's a timelessness there. So I think I love the digital photography, and I think that's what he was trying to make, the statement he was making with that photography. Underworld 3, I thought it was more of the same. honestly, I did not like the first two movies, so I think just for completion's sake. But the thing I've always liked about this series was Bill Nighy as Victor, the evil head vampire, and he's really good in the movie, but... I mean,
how did what's-her-name do as the Kate Beckinsale replacement?
She's okay, and to be fair, she's actually playing a different character. She's playing like the grandma of Beckinsale's character, because Underworld 3, Rise of the Lycans takes place like in the King Arthur age, so there's no guns. But at the very end, they bring Kate Beckinsale back, not as a cameo, it's just footage from the first movie, just to make the whole thing go full circle. So if you love the first two, see it, but otherwise it's like...
So it's a prequel.
Yes, and definitely not one they
it's
really
need. It's a preschool.
He's just not that into you. I was really not into this movie. I think the biggest problem with it is I think it can't get past the question, if you switched out all the star-studded cast with unknowns, the movie wouldn't be interesting, because the plot isn't memorable. It's not exceptional. It's all about the performances. I mean, you know, like Justin Long is really great, and so Jennifer Goodwin is fantastic in her first breakout role. Jennifer Connelly's great. Scarlett Johansson. All these guys really give wonderful performances, but there's just not much to the movie. All I'm going to say about Transformers 2 is I'll say what I said to you, Dave. I mean, I honestly walked out of the theater. I thought, you know, Michael Bay made this movie just to piss me off. You know. I thought it was just a hateful film. I'm on the same train as Chris and Ethan. I thought it was just a travesty.
So you hated. He's like, Barry hated the first one. I'm going to see just how far I can drive him over the edge.
Yeah, I think so. I think he was like 1.5 stars. What a wuss. Let's see how far down the line he can go. And I did. I gave it 0.5 star. Honestly, I thought it was just so bad. Every bad movie has a moment I call the irredeemable moment, where it's so bad the movie can't survive it. Transformers has one of those every 10 minutes.
I was gonna say, which one do you choose from? Transformers.
I know, there's so many. Like, you know, between, you know, John Turturro, or the teleporting at the end, or the first 10 minutes were astonishing. Like the movie hasn't even gotten started yet. Witwicky hasn't even got to college, and a blast comes down, all of his kitchen utensils come to life, his parents are running around screaming, the house explodes, Shia LaBeouf is running around, the dogs are humping, and then Megan Fox shows up on the lawn and immediately starts to strip. It's like, what is this? This is like a parody of itself, and the movie hasn't even started yet.
So you bring up the kitchen utensils. You didn't like the... I saw it as a bit of an homage to Gremlins. Did you see that at all?
Well, homage would indicate that, you know...
Respect in the first place.
Right. Because, you know, the movie also has a homage to Species that I thought was very distasteful. The scene in college.
Yeah.
With the robot chick with the tail coming out of her butt. I mean, that was like Species 4 right there.
They already made Species 4.
So. That's right, man. Yeah, so for me, it was just one painful, awful scene after another, and it went on for 2.5 hours. I think this is the worst film I've seen all year. Very briefly, saw the Woody Allen film Whatever Works. Funny, not bad, not one of his best films, but it's definitely worth seeing if you like Larry David, and especially Evan Rachel Wood. I Love You, Beth Cooper, I thought was one of the one of the disappointments of the year. Yeah.
But we haven't done this week's releases yet. You can't talk about that
yet. Sorry. Okay. And then finally, I saw Return to Oz at a midnight screening the other night. And fantastic movie. Holds up beautifully. People need to see it. It's so ahead of its time. I was watching a Siskel and Ebert review of it the other night, and they were saying, like, well, this film is it's so shocking, all the violence towards young women. You know, Dorothy goes to an asylum at the beginning of the movie. I wonder what these guys would have said about Pan's Labyrinth, like, 20 years later. I mean, like, seriously, Return to Oz was way ahead of its time. It is dark. It is scary. It's intense. But it's dark and scary and intense the way a really great fairy tale is, you know, like a Brothers Grimm kind of fairy tale, and that's what I think makes it a masterpiece.
Very cool. Yeah, it is a classic. It is very disturbing too. Yeah, there's a lot of darkness in there, but it's still a good movie. Yeah. Yes. So, okay, let's go ahead and talk about what hit theaters this past weekend, and then we'll let you unleash on I Love You, Beth Cooper.
All right. You got Bruno, which you may have heard of, and then I Love You, Beth Cooper, starring Hayden Panettiere.
Panettiere.
Okay, sorry.
I know, I always
butcher her name. Too. Cute girl. But
Tiara. Panettiere, I don't know.
Yeah. We're going to talk about her a couple times this episode.
That's
right, so
we
yeah.
Are, yeah.
Yeah. So okay, I'll let you get that over with first.
Well, I guess just to say this is based on one of the funniest books I've ever read. The screenplay was also written by the writer Larry Doyle. It's a hysterically funny book. I don't know what happened with the film. I think maybe Chris Columbus was the wrong guy to make this movie because the book is a combo of really sweet but also really dark, nasty humor, and the movie just never finds its tone. Parts of it are really mean. Like a lot of effort and energy went into the fight scenes, but the comedy doesn't work. The characters are really annoying. Hayden looks completely lost. Cute, but very lost. It just kind of lays there. It's just not that
good.
What
is the general plot of the film?
The plot of the movie is that it's about this young guy, Cooverman, who gets... he's the class Victorian. He's a super uber nerd. Gets on stage, and instead of giving his valedictorian speech in front of his class, he decides to declare in front of his whole class that he loves Beth Cooper, mm-hmm. that he's been in love with her since grade school. And the thing is that Cooper doesn't know that he exists. She's the head of the cheerleader squad, and her boyfriend is a psychotic, murderous guy who is insanely jealous. So, like, it's about how Cooperman's life changes after he declares his love for her, and the rest of the movie is how he runs off with Cooper because she kind of finds him cute and interesting, and her boyfriend wants to murder him, so it's kind of this big all-night-long chase scene. But
I can see how that could go horribly wrong or be really good.
It's a funny idea, and there's a lot of great comic possibilities, but the movie just botches it, and it's from the director of Adventures in Babysitting, which is surprising, because I thought that movie has a similar kind of all-night teen comedy feel, and it just doesn't work.
With Elizabeth Shue.
Yes, with Elizabeth Shue, one of my favorites.
Way to bring it back full circle. Mm-hmm. Well done, sir. Yes. So I know you two saw Bruno, and I guess I have to add the commentary from Josh's mom too later, but I'll let you guys talk about Bruno.
Well, I think that overall it's like, how do you really start to critique something like this? Because even though you can, it obviously has grounds to be compared to Borat because it's the same premise, but
you could even consider this a sequel, I think, to Borat.
Yeah, but I really felt like it was different, a different kind of, like a different level of humor and vileness, I guess. But I was reading something on Slash Film today, just people's comments about what did you think about it, and a lot of people were saying, oh, I think that the general public, this is going to completely go over their head, and they're not going to get it, and all this. And it's like, well, aren't you the general public, and you're saying that you understand the message of this movie? And I think that you're
elitism from movie geeks? Never.
But I think ultimately the message is to be offended by the people he interviews, and not, you're not supposed to be distracted by his flaming homosexuality, but... I mean, it's obviously a complete...
So it's not subtle? Is that what you're saying?
No, and I think that obviously that's his point, and you're supposed to... It's supposed to connect you with the fact that how much of America is just completely...
Homophobic.
Yeah, homophobic and completely just...
Just all about hetero.
Not accepting. I mean, there's a scene in the movie where they're at some kind of MMA fight thing.
UFC thing.
What is... Whatever, I don't know. Some... boxing type fighting thing, and was it in Alabama, some southern state, and Bruno is supposed to be
hetero Dave or something,
straight Dave, and everyone's wearing his t-shirts, and he's like, you know, who's straight here? Go heterosexuals. Like, everyone's getting all pumped up, and they keep showing this really big, burly guy just screaming, like, oh my god, yes, and so excited.
Right, straight Dave's like, you know what? When I buy a new house, I kick out the back door because my back door is only for exiting or something like that.
Like, yeah. Wow. And there even someone was in the audience that had a shirt that said something. No, it was like, my back door is only for that. And just how... I felt like there could have been even more of that. Like, I just didn't feel like he really was getting across the point that America is homophobic and we're not accepting of that. It was more just like, look at my ridiculous flamboyancy and how gay I can be and how it's going to offend people. And it didn't work as well as I thought it was going to. I thought it was really going to prove a better point, and I understand the point, but I think to people that don't put any extra thought into this are just going to think this is so gay and and just that, and I really think it could highly offend the gay community. And I think a lot of people will still think it's funny even if they are gay.
But it's offensive in the way that Borat's offensive, because he is like every single stereotype of a homosexual that you would think of. But I mean, that's the point of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I don't think that the movie really had a generalized theme like Borat did, and it was more about shocking people than it was about look at America as a society and look at like what's not accepted.
Yeah, and I felt like Borat was much more like, here's what a lot of America thinks of foreigner. Middle Eastern or foreigners, and the plot and the way it tied together in Borat was much more fluid than in Bruno. And Bruno just felt a little more forced. And like you said, the end was just like, there's this juxtaposition of him talking with a gay converter and he's asking him what he can do to become straight. And so it's like, well, can I do this? And then they show him going camping with a bunch of people in Alabama. Well, what else can I do? And they keep going back and forth between these two things.
There's like a whole 30-minute part of the movie where they kept jumping back and forth between this interview and like what he did. And that mm-hmm. just really didn't work. Whereas like, the first half of the movie was kind of like Borat, where you followed him on a journey type thing. So it's just like, I don't know why they wanted to cut it up like that. So
I hear there's a little bit of nudity in this movie.
Just a little bit.
Full frontal nudity.
Male and female.
Everywhere. You will see it all. And it didn't bother me at all. I mean, I think a lot of people weren't expecting it, like your mom. And
we'll talk about that shortly.
That part didn't bother me, I think.
But I don't think I expected it to be that bad either. I knew it was going to be...
I can't believe that it can be rated R and be played in theaters at all. And I saw so many young people, I don't know if they bought tickets to another movie and walked into this or how they got in, but I saw a very, very young crowd, and I can't believe they were there. And I also saw a rather elderly crowd too, and saw a couple of them walk out, so...
Yeah.
Something else I read just...
How can you go into this movie not expecting to get just offended in every way humanly possible?
Mm-hmm. And I think people, based on the preview, I mean, they can't show anything explicit in the preview, but come on, I mean, if you know who Sacha Baron Cohen is,
saw the MTV Movie Awards.
You should know.
If you saw him on Conan, if you saw him on Letterman, like... Everything he's been doing to promote the movie has been so over the top. And I think that's another point of the movie is, like, research what you're going to go see, because you're going to see a movie that has a lot of dicks in it. If you don't want to see that, then, like, you know.
A lot of... I can't believe that some of that stuff. But, I mean, really, the first probably 10 minutes... He's having sex with, like, this short, like, was he Asian? His little, like, lover guy? Oh, it was very weird. But, I mean, I went with it, and it was hilarious. And if you can just go with it, I mean, I can totally understand how this just won't work for people. And it's obviously going to get its criticisms. But something that was in the preview, you know, he has the black baby named OJ. And, I mean, So it was much more staged than Borat, I think. And, you know, he's on a Jerry Springer-like show, and the entire audience, the whole audience, every member is black. And he's completely criticizing the African-American community. And it's like, of course you're going to rile these people up. So I just...
He's got a photo of the baby on a crucifix with... other white babies crucifying him as Jesus. And then we didn't see the photo, but they had the babies dressed up like Nazis pushing Jewish babies into an oven.
And that was pushing, at one point. And that was about seeing just how far like parents will go to get their kid in the show business.
Just
and that part was really funny. They were interviewing parents. Is your baby okay with bees and wasps? Oh yeah, she's fine with anything. And just
he asked a parent if they would be okay to have their baby get liposuction. To lose
no, life. they asked this lady, can oh, your baby weighs 30 pounds. Can, you know, Sally lose 10 pounds in a week? And she was like, yeah, you know, I'll do whatever's possible. And she's like, you know, well, if she can't lose the weight, can you get liposuction? She's like, well, if it comes to that, yeah, I guess so. And then they tell her that her baby gets the part to be the Nazi. And she's like, well, yeah, if she gets the part, then that's okay. And it just really exploits people's stupidity, but you have to wonder how much of this people were already in on or what, because I really didn't, it wasn't as
clever as
it wasn't as clever as Borat at all.
And from talking with you guys as well as Josh's mom last night, the problem isn't even so much the content of the movie, it's that the fact that it got an R rating. Mm-hmm. Essentially, everyone last night at the party we were at was declaring the MPAA to be a complete joke.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem, like Josh's mom had, just because I'll bring this up, was the fact that they weren't carding anyone to get into the theater.
Nope. I mean, your little brother, who's 14, was sitting with us before the movie started because we were waiting to get dinner from your mom. And it's like, no one was there. No one was checking anything. And I think even if you wanted to bring your kids to this, you shouldn't be able to.
Well, that's the whole thing about it being an R rating, mm-hmm. being a joke.
Mm-hmm. So. But I also think that, I mean, right after we got out of the movie, that's exactly what we were talking about. And I was telling your mom, I think that the whole movie is a comment on that, how look what we can get away with.
Especially
and how
with
nobody
this,
even cares and how nobody did anything about it.
Because I was telling you guys last night, some people might not know this, but Universal bought the rights to make Bruno after Borat for $200 million. So this is a big studio
and it's
movie.
Up in 30.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, they put a lot of money towards this and they made a movie that has things that shouldn't be in any movie in it. So mm-hmm. it's just like, I just I don't know.
Well, it just shows what a business decision this was. I mean, Universal has, other than Public Enemies, they've made this their big summer film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is one of the most hyped films of the summer. And, you know, I mean, almost 10 years ago to the day, Stanley Kubrick's Eyes Wide Shut opened, and it was the same question. This film is R, but it's an adult film. It's made for adults. It's got lots of nudity. It deals graphically with sexuality. Why are we giving it a rating that makes it okay for kids to see it as long as the parents bring them in? And it's you know, it's all money. It's all studio. You know, it's Hollywood doing what it does best. It's show business.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough.
Well, I think overall, if you're ready for it, go see it. But if you think that you're gonna have a problem, just don't subject yourself to
because you will have
this.
A problem with it. Mm-hmm. If you think you might, you probably will.
Because it's not like Borat, which I think everyone should see, because it's just like it makes you just really question certain parts of society. This is just like, do you want to really put yourself through that for a couple laughs?
Fair enough. Okay, well, let's wrap this up because we're already over almost 25 minutes into this episode. So let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting DVD this week. Hit some news and go from there.
This week in DVD, what do we got? We've got the film 12 in subtitles. I've heard this is an excellent film. Grey Gardens, this is with Jessica Lange and Drew Barrymore, critically acclaimed HBO film. The Haunting in Connecticut, which actually made about $50 million when it was in theaters a couple months back. That's with Virginia Madsen. Don't be fooled. The State, the complete series.
Woo-hoo!
It's all about the pudding. Hangin' Tough Live, the New Kids in the Block concert, which is, you know, I'm actually in no place to make fun of this because Julia and her sister are going to see them in concert this Wednesday. So,
no. To be fair, they didn't pay for tickets.
No, they won it on the radio. Yeah. Keira Knightley's The Edge of Love, which nobody saw. Apparently, unless she's in a pirate garb, nobody sees her movies. Wreck is finally coming to DVD. This is the film that inspired Quarantine, but see Wreck, it's the real deal. The Color of Magic, what is that?
This is the Terry Pratchett miniseries that like kind of like they did with The Hogfather last year. This is the next film from the BBC.
Oh,
it's a bit bigger in scope. It's just as funny. It's got Sean Astin. It's got Daniel Day-Lewis. It's got so many people. No, it's not Daniel Day-Lewis. Who's in it?
Oh, I drink your milkshake.
Yeah, no. It wasn't him. Hey, let me think. My bad. Actually, it's Jeremy Irons is in it. Tim Curry's in it. It's really good. It's fun. We picked it up last Christmas, and yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Okay. We still recording?
Yeah.
Okay. Let's see. Mad Men Season 2, great show if you haven't seen it yet, and crap title of the week, the sequel nobody asked for, Van Wilder, freshman year, sans Ryan Reynolds.
He has better things to do. Should we just start off with that for our news?
Sure.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay, so thank Pez that Justin Timberlake is not playing Green Lantern. Because I do not need to see a Green Lantern construct of a dick in a box. I'm just saying. Because you know what happened. No, it wouldn't. But Ryan Reynolds has gotten the part instead of... So now he's playing Green Lantern and Deadpool. Which I don't know how I feel about that. Because they're two diametrically opposed characters. I mean, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting because he's like born to play Deadpool after seeing Waiting, after seeing all these really gross-out movies he does. But as well as when you see The Nines, did you ever see that?
Love The Nines, yeah.
I wasn't a fan of the movie, but I think he showed a lot of range and he can really act, and I think he'll be able to pull it off well.
This is like when Christian Bale got, you know, John Connor and Batman. It seems like one too many franchises for one man. I mean, you know, only Harrison Ford can pull that off. But, you know, like you said, these characters are very different, so maybe it'll work.
I hope so. I hope so. Since you said heroes, I might as well do my second story. Said we were going to bring up Hayden Panettiere again. I don't know. This just smacks of desperation. Like, I don't know where this could come from. But one of the showrunners for Heroes did an interview and said apparently that Claire is going to go through some experimental times this coming season, getting a little girl-on-girl action, apparently. And just in case you're thinking, hey, well, maybe this is just the natural progression they've always had planned for the character, he said, well, if the audience really likes it, we'll make it more of it. Which means, please watch our show. Please, please, please.
Sweet week.
Yeah, this show sucks and it needs to die.
I'm glad totally I stopped watching
lost
it.
Lost me.
After the second season, that was enough. The Wonderless Twins killed it for me. And it's never... I've checked it out here and there in the third season. It just hasn't...
It's too bad because the first season was so good.
Well, they also ripped off a lot of X-Men stories. But still, if you do it well...
Was the third season them, like, convicts?
Yes.
And was that any good at all?
Well, the thing is that people were hopeful because Brian Fuller was coming back from Pushing Daisies because it got canceled. And it's just come out that he's quit. So he's not coming back for the next season of Heroes, which means it's definitely going to suck. So, anyone else have any news?
They're making a film out of Welcome Back, Kotter. Only there's a twist. It stars Ice Cube and it's set in South Central LA. Whether John Travolta will make a cameo remains to be seen.
Well, we already had the Jufro. Is he going to grow out an afro for it?
This seems like they're trying to do with Welcome Back, Kotter what they did with The Honeymooners. You know, turn it into an urban comedy. Well, remember how they did The Honeymooners with Cedric the Entertainer?
You heard what they're doing with The Warriors, right?
No.
Ridley Scott's doing Warriors remake, and it's going to be in L.A., not in New York.
Hmm. I didn't know that.
Well, isn't The Warriors kind of about gangs anyway?
Yeah, but not L.A. gang. I mean, the whole movie's about New York and Coney Island and baseball bats and kiss makeup. I mean, it's like...
Because they still do that in New York, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Well, The Warriors is a product of its time. I mean, it's not meant for a literal modern update. I mean, that film is, you know, it's more of a mythological depiction of these different gangs than it is about the Crips and the Bloods.
Yeah.
So who knows? Yeah, we'll just see. That hurts, sir. Well done. Well done. Wow. Wow. Does anyone else have anything else?
The Jennifer's Body trailer came out, which I got to say was very, very underwhelming.
That is such a stupid looking movie. I don't care who wrote it. I forgot who wrote it, and I read it, and I'm like, oh, well, it still looks stupid, so.
Well, if it flops, you know, it just shows that, I think it'll be kind of people's verification that Juno was a fluke, you know. But if it's a hit, then, you know, Diablo Cody be writing every movie.
I'm sorry, I didn't like Juno.
Well, here's my question. Would it be showing more that Diablo Cody is, that Juno was a fluke? Or does it just confirm what everyone thinks about Megan Fox?
Could be both. But, you know, in all fairness, Diablo Cody did not direct this movie. So if it sucks, it could be, you know, taking perhaps a good screenplay and butchering it. That happens all the time.
I think it's interesting, though, that the trailer didn't say from the writer of Juno on it. It just said Diablo Cody. So yeah. I'm sure...
I think it said that would set a different kind of standard. People would expect to be expecting the smart, sassy girl, you know, which Amanda Seyfried is not going to be in this movie. You can just tell.
Yeah, it looks dreadful. It looks really bad. But, you know, if this ends Megan Fox's career other than Transformers 3, so be it.
All right, then. Well, does anyone else have anything else, or is that a pretty good stopping point to take a break?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Sue Ellen Greenblatt is a real person, not an internet celebrity. So we've enlisted Billy Flynn and the Vicar to help her tell her story.
Geek Radio Daily gives me geeky news about movies, new DVD releases, even comics and gaming.
Geek Radio Daily makes me feel special.
Ah, yeah.
Womanly.
Yeah.
Okay, so the episodes are just 15 minutes, perfect for my commute or for just geeking out while I'm at the office.
Mm. All in one concise love package.
Ooh, the package, baby.
Uh-huh. And the best part is that it's a daily cast, so I'm always in the loop.
Sometimes I listen to it out of the bath, put on little outfits.
Ah!
It makes me want to invite all my friends over to show how refreshed I feel.
Mm, a slumber party, baby.
What? That's not what I said.
Get out the
chocolate mousse.
Duct tape.
Oh, get out of here, you freaks.
Geek Radio Daily. One 15-minute podcast provides 15% of the USDA recommended daily allowance of geeky goodness. Subscribe through iTunes or visit geekradiodaily.com.
All right, and we are back, and this week we're continuing the series on Joe Dante. That's right, kids. We are back to doing director series. This week it's The Explorers.
It's the film Explorers starring Joe, not Joe Dante. Well, Joe Dante is the star of all of his movies. Who are we kidding? But the film stars River Phoenix and Ethan Hawke in their film debuts, as well as Jason Presson, Robert Picardo, and Dick Miller, because you know it's a Joe Dante movie if Dick Miller's in the cast. I love this movie because it has the same feel, the same idea as E.T. the Extraterrestrial, which came out just a few years earlier. It's that whole idea of a bunch of kids looking out of the sky at night and wondering what is out there, what are the possibilities, and allowing your imagination, your ambition, and your dreams and fantasies to you know, completely encapsulate your childhood. This is a film about childhood dreams and escaping. It's a similar idea. These kids have parents who either don't get them or are just somewhat abusive, in a sense. Certainly Jason Presson, the kid who... should probably talk about the plot first, shouldn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah.
You've got three kids. You've got Ethan Hawke, this boy who at night dreams. He has these dreams that show basically a blueprint of, we don't know what yet, but a blueprint that's been sent from somewhere else. His best friend, one of his best friends, is played by River Phoenix. River Phoenix is this really nerdy kid who is able to create these incredible inventions, kind of like the Data for this movie. Data being from the Goonies, not Star Trek. And then you get Jason Presson playing this kid who clearly has an abusive family, who basically just meets these two guys just kind of on a whim, and they form this really unlikely friendship, and they end up discovering a means to create a spaceship and also possibly to reach out to the people who have been contacting them telepathically. So that's the setup. And this is one of the most compromised films, if not the most compromised movie that Joe Dante ever made. As the story goes, it was supposed to be a big summer of 1985 release, the 1 year exactly after Gremlins, so the film was certainly rushed into production. Everything was going very smoothly until the studio decided they wanted out in theaters by June and not August, so all of a sudden, you know, that completely cut the production time in half. The special effects were rushed, the ending was rushed, a lot of scenes got lost. It's worth noting that there's a character in the movie who is watching a film at the drive-in when a spaceship swoops down and almost takes his head off. That character was supposed to be Ethan Hawke's brother. He only has one scene in the movie now. Dick Miller is in the film playing an agent who gets involved in the boys' exploits. He was originally supposed to be a much bigger part. He apparently was in a fantasy sequence that got cut in the movie, but you see a frame of it in this fantasy sequence towards the end of the film. And then you've got the ending. The ending, which most people are very split on, because all of a sudden the whole tone of the film changes. It goes from being kind of an E.T., Last Starfighter kind of movie into something that's much more completely cartoonish, in-your-face cartoonish. And that's kind of one of the reasons this movie is accused of being a kids' movie as opposed to a really great teen sci-fi 80s film that it really is, ultimately. Without giving anything away, the ending of the movie is you see the aliens and you see how they are inspired by American pop culture because all they do is watch TV in this spaceship. The thing about this scene that is so corny is the aliens only know how to talk to these kids through using TV voices and TV characters, what works about the scene, what's really interesting, is visually Joe Dante shows these TV screens surrounding these kids, engulfing these kids. They're always surrounded by TV static and snow. They're always surrounded by these images. And it's a lot like the Twilight Zone segment of Twilight Zone, the movie that Joe Dante directed, the whole idea of a house being completely dictated and completely controlled and submerged by television. So again, Joe Dante's trying to make that statement about how we we're completely consumed by TV and TV's consuming us. But that still doesn't make the ending any less corny. It's a very corny ending. Robert Picardo shows up completely unrecognizable in this alien suit, does quite a lot with what he has, but the ending is very anticlimactic. And that's of course because Joe Dante had the movie snatched from him. It was basically released before he could finish the film. And when it was released, nobody saw it. This was the summer of Rambo and the Goonies and Back to the Future, so explorers certainly got left behind, so did Return to Oz for that matter. And now it's certainly one of these cult movies that people kind of discovered over the years. There's very few people I know of, certainly, who have seen this in the theater, but it's a visually great film. It's one of my favorite Jerry Goldsmith scores. The special effects, I think, are fantastic, especially the scene where River Phoenix is engulfed by that bubble and he takes him on a ride. Some really, really great stuff in this movie, and I actually prefer it a little more to Gremlins because... And I'll tell you why. Because Gremlins...
The look of shock on Josh's face right now is priceless.
Which is understandable. Gremlins is a much better movie overall, but I like Explorers because for me... To me, it's because the characters are recognizable to me. I always thought that what they went through was more human and universal. With Gremlins, from the very first scene, this is a fantasy. I mean, Kingston Falls is a fantasy. Mrs. Deagle, there's no one like Mrs. Deagle. The only person in town who is Billy's friend is also the hottest girl in the whole town, Phoebe Cates. Gremlins never felt real to me. Explorers felt real to me in the sense that it started with very human characters that I recognized, with kids that I knew that reminded me of kids I grew up with. And then it got fantastic. But for me, Gremlins, even before the Gremlins showed up, for me, Gremlins, I thought this is not real life. No town is this good. No girl next door is as hot as Phoebe Cates. Couldn't buy it as reality.
I will say that we haven't talked to Melissa and Josh yet, but I have a feeling that Barry and I will probably like it more because we're of a generation. We grew up in the 80s when all of us had dreams where you had, you build that spaceship out of a cardboard box. And when you find a way to make that translate into something super, I wouldn't say supernatural, but something fantastic, it just kind of lets your imagination run wild. And I don't know if you guys ever ran into that. So I'm very curious to see what you think about
that's it. That's the same point that I wrote down, is I just simply don't think that a majority of our generation was nearly as creative or interested in the outside world. And it's not that I didn't play in cardboard boxes and, have adventures with my Barbies and whatever, but it wasn't the same. And I really wasn't as entertained by this movie as I think you guys were for that reason. And at first I felt like it was slow. And then when you realize Ethan Hawke is the kid, and I had no idea that this was his first movie, and I didn't know he did any acting as a child. I mean, did he do any other movies when he was...
Very young?
Young?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I had no idea, because I love him, but I definitely saw and felt Joe Dante's presence in this movie much more so than in The Howling. I felt lost completely to that, but in comparison with The Burbs and even Gremlins, I can recognize it. So that was pretty much the only connection I had with this movie, though, and I like his creativity, but this story was just eh. For me.
Well, and you think about it, the modes of the transportation we had as kids is totally different. I mean, yes, mm-hmm. we had video games, but we had the Atari 2600, and wow, was that hot stuff.
You know what I mean? I've had a computer in my room since I was probably 5, so, it's completely different, and it's definitely super 80s feeling, and I mean, this was 4 years before I was even born, so it's not as easily relatable.
Well, you know, the computer issue is a really great point, because this movie was made at a time when people really didn't know what computers were capable of. That's why you had movies like Tron and Electric Dreams. You know, people, you know, they made all these movies where computers could, like, you know, blow up the planet, you know, just by hitting a keystroke.
War Games.
Right, exactly. Thank you. You know, and so, like, you know, in Explorers, you know, River Phoenix is using the computer, and he's creating, like, not only schematics for this, you know, for this spaceship, but he's also controlling, you know, by computer, this alien force, you know, this bubble. And, you know, I mean, it's as plausible as, like, you know, wiping out an alien race with a computer virus.
Or Transformers.
Especially Transformers.
Or computer hacking being like in Hackers.
Exactly. Right, right. You know, it's very, very naive. Yeah, this movie's more of, you know, it's very, you know, post-70s, early 80s. It's hard to talk about this movie and not get personal. I one of the reasons I went to Space Camp was because of this movie, you know, and because of movies like Space Camp and E.T. like this. I mean, I really was one of those kids like Ethan Hawke in this movie, used to sit on my roof and, like, look at the stars and look at the possibilities and think about how small we are and how extraordinary the universe is. I mean, that, you know, I know this is a corny movie, but that's really what it does to me.
I can understand that. And there is a YouTube thing out there where I don't even remember when this is. I'm sorry, September 29th, 2008. Joe Dante was at the New Beverly in L.A. talking at an Explorers screening, and he talks a little bit about how the movie was taken away from him and stuff. And I'll put that in the show notes. I'll actually probably just throw the video up on the post. So, yeah. What were you going to say? I didn't mean to cut you off there.
Oh, I don't know. Just more about computers and, you know, I don't know what kind of kids' cartoons or TV shows were at the time, but I felt like TV was such a huge thing in the 90s, and that's for kids. I mean, oh my gosh, Disney Channel just exploding and watching so much TV. I feel like so many kids
were just... Well, Nickelodeon. I could probably sit here and name like 20 shows I watched.
Yeah, and I mean...
In a day.
You watch so much TV, if your parents let you, until they realized it was very bad for your development. But I think the creativity just... is a different level with how you guys grew up and how we grew up, and I just didn't connect to it.
Fair enough. And you know, it's interesting you bring up TV, because the TV shows when we were kids actually played into what Explorers did very much, just looking at Captain N and Kid Video.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know where those came from. That was just totally out of nowhere. So thank you, yeah. Melissa.
And I really don't feel like there was a lot of space anything TV shows. I mean, and being female, I wasn't interested in that at all. So I just
wanted to go to space camp.
Yeah, well,
it's fun. Lucky. You'd enjoy it. I'd go back in a heartbeat.
Is there an age requirement?
No, they even have like older astronauts, like, they, you know, older people. Really? They got a family package. I mean, it's
we should
sky's
go.
The limit. Yeah,
Screen Geeks retreat.
Yeah, space camp.
Never thought I'd be plugging that on this show, but no, Huntsville, Alabama, space camp. Do it. It's fun.
Very cool. So I don't know. Would you recommend watching this movie? I'm very curious. You can be completely honest, because this is not his best movie ever by a long shot.
That's our generation.
If I was just talking to my friends, I think I kind of had to make myself watch this too. But I mean, it wasn't that I hated it. I didn't hate it or anything. But it just wasn't what I was expecting it to be, and it wasn't as exciting as that. And maybe that my expectations are just a totally different level. And I think that the age of the movie really had to do a lot with it. And, I mean, no, I wouldn't recommend it to people our age. You know, 20-somethings.
If you're like a hardcore movie geek and Joe Dante fan, sure. But.
Yeah, or unless you are really into space or E.T.-esque films. I just don't think it really works for the entertainment value that our generation is expecting, especially when weird stuff like Bruno comes out and Explorers is like a snooze compared to certain things. So,
well, I think you'll be happy next week when we wrap up the series with Matinee, because
I'm very interested in that.
Very fun movie, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It almost plays like an homage to oh goodness, why am I spacing on him? The shock guy from the 50s, the movie.
William Castle.
Yeah, William Castle.
It's basically the William Castle story. Absolutely right. Yeah.
So yeah, we'll be talking about that next week. It shall be much fun. This is a true high note, I think, for us to end a director series on.
Definitely.
But before that, we have to finish this episode. So let's go ahead and talk about what's hitting theaters this week and go from there.
Opening everywhere Wednesday, Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. And then Friday in limited release, Zooey Deschanel and Joseph Gordon-Levitt in 500 Days of Summer in limited release.
Just a little bit too limited before we can talk about it. I think we have to wait another week before we can officially talk
about
it.
I've heard Harry Potter's like Oscar.
Epic.
So they're saying. Best one yet. Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it. I know Steph's like, we're going to see that. I'm like, okay, that works for me. Just not the midnight, I don't think.
Oh, no. Yeah, my buddy on Maui's going to see a midnight. I'm like, Greg, you know, you're not going to get out till 4 a.m. It's like, it's late.
Dang. Okay, that's some commitment right there. Mm-hmm. Dang. So, yeah.
Well, you went to the, it's probably as long as Transformers, right? And you said you went to the 12 and you got out at 3:30 or something?
12 in the afternoon.
Yeah, but still.
Yeah, Greg's off to see Harry Potter at midnight. So more power to you, buddy. You'll be getting out at 4 a.m. The sun will be coming up. Because, you know, with the trailers, too. I mean, that's a light night. It's a long movie.
Well, even if it's 2.5 hours, isn't that closer to 3 o'clock?
But with the trailers?
Yeah.
I don't know. Because I saw Transformers 2 and it started at 12:30. Didn't get out till 3:30. That was exactly 3 hours.
Exactly, be 3 hours from 12 to 3, as opposed to 12 to 4.
But still.
He's got to go get more popcorn. And he's
I can't add. You're absolutely right, Dave.
Sorry, I didn't mean to do that, dude. Okay, so we've got that taken care of. And then let's talk about what's hitting DVD next week.
DVD next week, what do we got? Pushing Daisy, Season 2 with Lee Pace. Bundy, A Legacy of Evil. No, not Al Bundy. Ted Bundy. Yeah. Don't see that. Coraline, a movie that I swear, if I see it again, it'll probably be one of the best films I've seen. Like, I saw this movie, I loved it, I slapped it with 3 stars and moved on. This movie is much better than that. This is a terrific film. Messengers 2, The Scarecrow, not one of the best films of the year. This is the straight-to-DVD sequel to The Messengers, formerly with Kristen Stewart, no longer in this sequel, which is R-rated as opposed to the PG-13 first one. Zack Snyder's Watchmen, available in every edition you could possibly imagine.
It's essentially the Baskin-Robbins 31 flavors of DVD releases between the regular cut, the director's cut, the Owlship gift set, Blu-ray.
And overseas, I was reading in Empire Magazine, they have an edition where it's Dr. Manhattan's head, and they also have an edition where it's Rorschach's head.
Yeah, I saw that.
Head. His skull. His skull, Dave. Moving on.
Then they have like the Uber edition coming out in December still, and if you buy it on DVD now, you get like $5 off or $10 off. Uh-oh. Like the super deluxe, like Black Freighter in the movie 4-hour cut.
Wow,
something like that.
And none of the special features are going to be carrying over to each other. So if you want all the special features, you got to buy all the versions.
That's ridiculous. So moving on, The Lucy Show, the Lucille Ball show that ran in 1962, season one, the original Lucy, no, excuse me, this is not I Love Lucy, this is the spinoff without her husband. Robot Chicken, Star Wars Episode II. Excellent. Available in Criterion for the first time, Jean-Luc Godard, my favorite director, his films Made in the USA, which I haven't seen, and Two or Three Things I Know About Her. I love this movie. This is about the housewife who sends her kids to school. When her kids are away, she's a prostitute. Actually, a really great movie, a real commentary on consumerism. Excellent film. The Great Buck Howard, a very charming, very low-key, but really wonderful film starring John Malkovich, Colin Hanks, Emily Blunt, and in a cameo, Tom Hanks. Great film. And Super Mario Brothers Super Show, Off the Map, including episodes from the briefly aired television series
that
from the 90s.
That show was awful.
With Captain Lou Albano?
I love Captain Lou.
Heck yeah. Again, that's an 80s thing, I think.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever see the Zelda cartoon that was on?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, Q-Bird, Pac-Man, yeah. I want like, a DVD that has all those, because remember they just had the ones with the 70s shows? I want all the 80s shows, Q-Bird and Pac-Man, well, Dungeons & Dragons.
I saw today.
You can buy Dungeons & Dragons.
That's right, you can, yeah.
I saw today they made a Kirby movie. Kirby's the big pink thing.
They had a whole cartoon series about him.
They did?
Oh, yeah,
like, it sucks things
Fox.
Up.
Yeah.
Sorry, yeah, that's okay.
Is it pink thing that sucks?
It's like
out?
A Nintendo game, video game character. It's like a big. If you pulled up a picture,
it's like a big bubble.
I thought that was Pokemon.
No.
Okay. No. Whatever.
Huh. All right. Is that all we've got for releases?
That's it.
Okay. Well, then let's move on to mail and the topic that just won't stop giving, Transformers 2.
Revenge of the Fallen. Must say the entire title.
No, we mustn't. We don't. We, there's no must about anything with this. After Melissa's and my discussion about it last week, we got an email from our good friend Christopher over at Jonja.net, who I think may be joining us next week for the episode about Matinee, because I found out he's a huge fan. Anyhow, from Christopher, he says, "While I think audience bashing can be a slippery slope and an easy trap to fall into, I also think there's nothing wrong with showing people the error of their way. I think it is up to critics and fans of film alike to ask the audience en masse to expect more from their movies and television shows. If holding up a mirror to them occasionally is the only way to do it, then so be it. That being said, may I also say just how stoked I am at your upcoming discussion of Matinee. This is one of my favorite movies and maybe my favorite Dante film. As a fan of the B-movie, I found John Goodman's role as the Roger Corman-like filmmaker so much fun. The film ends up being a sweet homage to the movies of a tumultuous and uncertain time, as well as the houses that showed them and the people who love them. Keep your eyes open during the scary parts." So I love the fact that Christopher actually emailed us about this whole thing about interaction with our audience, who's also the film's audience, because I think there's a difference between making fun of someone for liking something, and that's awesome that we have a thunderstorm. It's about time to wrap this thing up, I think. Roger Ebert talked about this because he got a lot of hate for his
one-star review.
Yeah, his one-star review of Transformers, blah, 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 blah. and in this column, Ebert actually quotes Gene Siskel. I'll read this excerpt. I'll actually put the link up in the show notes as well. It says, when a so-called, this is talking about the difference between, it's not really talking about the difference between telling someone they're an idiot or being factually wrong. This is just talking about there's a way to approach it. When a so-called film critic defended a questionable review by saying, after all, it's an opinion, Gene Siskel told him, "There's a point when a personal opinion shades off into an error of fact. When you say The Veloci Papers is a better film than The Godfather, you are wrong." And I think this is a case where someone says, "This Transformers, it's like the new Star Wars." No, you are wrong. Unless we're talking about the prequel trilogy. I'm kidding. I would so watch I think the prequel trilogy is way better than Transformers 2. But I think it's a matter of saying, you know, "I'm sorry, you're just wrong." It's like there's the guy that I've talked about before who said that In the Name of the King kicked Lord of the Rings butt, and I told him, "You are never allowed to talk to me about film ever again." And finally, he's like, "Why did you know?" Essentially, it was, "Why would he say something like that?" And then he went back and watched it, and he's like, "Okay, yeah, you were right." Mm-hmm. You know, so just very interesting. We have to be mindful to, yes, we have our opinions, and some things are fact without being condescending. So
I think, because I haven't really said anything about Transformers yet, but
you haven't.
if it was good crap, then it'd be different, but it's not even good crap. It's just crap. And so people being like, "Well, it's action and it's like exactly what it needed to be," but it's bad action and it's bad crap.
Well, and I have absolutely no problem with telling people that, you know what, the CG in this movie is bad. The CG during the fights is just bad. So I mean there's certain points that you can't defend.
Yeah.
But when it comes to someone's opinion saying they liked the movie, there's a certain point where you have to just kind of let it go, I think. So, yeah.
There's also the issue of misogyny. I think that's the bigger thing, because everybody jumped on the issue of the racist robots, and I agree. Skid and Mudflap are a disgrace against humanity. But I think I was a little more concerned with the robots themselves referring to women as bitches, and as they do in one point. And all the women in the movie are portrayed as, like, you know, backup dancers from an R. Kelly video or worse. I think that's the bigger issue. But, you know, this is a very good point. It is a slippery slope, because it's okay for people to like Twinkies. It's bad for people to say that Twinkies are as good as filet mignon, you know? That's a problem. Or to say, you know, that a Hostess Ho-Ho is, you know, is as good as, like, the greatest steak dinner you ever have in your life. It's okay for people to like Twinkies. And, you know, I think you need to be a little more respectful of that, because certainly our generation, I mean, they made 8 Police Academy movies. I'm one of the reasons. There are 12 movies now about a guy who walks around with a hockey mask and kills sex-crazed teenagers. I'm one of the reasons that there are 12 of these awful movies. You know, sometimes, you know, you just kind of have to let people like what they like. And we can't be such snobs to say that every generation doesn't have this. Every generation does. Everybody's like, the 70s was such a great period. They made a bunch of Herbie the Love Bug movies in the 70s. And the 80s had the Police Academy movies. And now we got the
I love Herbie the Love Bug, I'll have you know.
Which one was Bruce Campbell in?
Herbie Fully Loaded.
That doesn't count.
Okay.
We're going to pretend that never happened.
No, I totally agree with you, Barry, that it's okay if you like it, but if you're going to compare it to things that actually have any sort of theatrical and emotional value to an audience, then you're in a different category that we're not going to discuss.
There we go. Yes.
Well, it's like we were just talking. My dad just mentioned to me that we should watch Bedtime Stories. Right. And I've not seen Bedtime Stories, but I know from 5 seconds of the trailer that I want to stay as far away from that movie as I possibly can. But I'm not going to be like, well, you're an idiot because you want to suggest that movie to me.
Fair enough.
No.
Fair enough. Well, and if you would like to send us an email as well, you are more than welcome to do so. You can just send us an email to podcast. Let's see, what order do I want to do this week? Melissa, Josh, Barry, Ethan, or Dave, or podcast. I think I said that already. At screengeeks.com. You can also leave us a voicemail at 719-553-5664. And next week, as we've said, we're going to be talking about Joe Dante's The Howling. And then we're going to move on to David Fincher.
Wait, The Howling?
No, I'm not The Howling. Matinee.
Matinee.
We like I The must Howling be tired. So much, we're going to go back and watch The Howling.
No, I think
we're going to watching Howling 2, Your Sister's a Werewolf, Howling 3, The Marsupials.
Okay, so yeah, it's totally the
I actually have both of those at my house. My friend Mark let me borrow them.
Wow.
It's not going to watch
It's totally all. Matinee. And then we're going to go into David Fincher, and we're going to kick that one off right with 7. So yeah, we got some fun stuff coming up. But until next week, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Josh.
And Melissa.
Take it easy.